Taylor, this is insane. I mean, like, I didn't expect to be experiencing this here, but somebody wrote racial slurs in the mirror in my bathroom.
Oh my gosh, that's horrible.
Yeah, I mean, I'm talking all these different expletives written on it in Sharpie. I can't even get it off the mirror anymore. I feel like I should contact somebody and report this, or at least like post it on Twitter or Facebook. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, we should definitely report this to authorities. That's really terrible, and we need to find out whoever's responsible for this and get to the bottom of it.
Yeah, no, it's like I've never experienced such blatant racism in my entire life, and I feel like, it's a failure of this institution.
I mean, it's an awful thing, and I'm very sorry that you had to experience that. I mean, it's really unacceptable, and the perpetrator should be brought to justice.
And in Sharpie, like I can't even wipe it off my mirror anymore. Like, it's absolutely disgusting. How dare somebody like write such horrible stuff on my mirror?
In Sharpie, you said?
Yes, Sharpie.
Is that a new? I mean, I don't dare ask if it's like part of your hairstyle, but I see a little pen or something sticking out of your ear there. Is that, what sort of pen is that?
I literally have no idea what you're talking about, so.
Oh, okay. Well, it kind of looked like a Sharpie and, oh my God, wait a second. Is this a noose? Did I just, oh wait, it's just a phone charger. I think we're okay.
And scene. Now, this was a race hoax opening. A hate crime hoax.
Amala Smollett over here.
Amala Smollett. Amala Wallace, if you will. Which we're going to get into a story. And it's not about Jussie Smollett. It's not about Bubba Wallace and his fake news. This is a different hate crime. But we're going to get to that in a moment. Because I know you guys, you miss him, I'm sure. You miss Mr. Will Witt. And because of that, we got an interview. Exclusive interview with Will Witt himself while he's on his book tour. So let's get into that and see what Will's up to. Guys, we have a very special guest on the show today. He begged me to be on, I must say. I really had to fight him off for quite some time, but he was so persistent that I decided I would let him on Amala live. Today we have Will Witt. Will, how's it going?
You said special guest, but you should have said very, very special guest. I know people don't really know who I am, and they don't understand the importance of having me on today, but that's okay. You know, granted, they wouldn't understand.
Well, Will, what are you doing right now? Why are you not here?
I am in West Virginia right now, Country Roads, Take Me Home. I'm about to give my third book tour stop right now. By the time that I think this comes out, I will actually be giving the speech. So I'm actually very impressed with West Virginia. I drove from Maryland to West Virginia, and it was beautiful driving through the Appalachian Mountains. I was shocked at how beautiful it was here. So all you West Virginians, like you guys do good things. I'm proud of you.
Did you previously have something against West Virginia?
Well, I didn't know that West Virginia like looked so cool. I didn't know that it looked so cool. I mean, the town that I'm in, Morgantown, parts of it are kind of run down. That's where West Virginia University is. So it's not like it's not like Manhattan or anything. But I mean, it's cool, just the surrounding area. It's nice.
You thought it was just a bunch of hillbillies and coal mines, didn't you?
Well, listen, all the coal mines in West Virginia are shutting down, and the state's population is totally decreasing. It's a sad state for West Virginia. And also, West Virginia is like one of the hardest hit states from the opiate epidemic. So there's a lot of problems here in West Virginia, but I can say that regardless of the problems, the scenery is beautiful.
Okay, and you just got back from Maryland, and you had a very interesting experience at UMD that I want you to sort of go over and talk about what ended up happening, because we covered it on the show. We knew that you were going to get protested and that, you know, the students were angry about the fact that you were going to be on campus. What's the full story?
Yes, Maryland Monroe. That's where I was. It was a wonderful event. We had about 200 people show up to the event who were fans. And then we had about, are you laughing at my joke? Or what are you laughing at?
I don't know. It just
it was funny.
It was a grower.
I don't know that she was like laughing at the joke. I was just laughing at how random and unfunny it was. Yeah.
That too.
I thought it was funny. Listen, the audience will appreciate Maryland Monroe. Okay. Anyway, I did this event, and it was at University of Maryland. And so we got about 200 people. And then there were about 100 people who weren't let into the event actually because of COVID restrictions in the university and everything. And so at first there were these signs from all these left-wing protesters that they can call themselves activists if they want, but they're really just people who scream at you until you do their bidding. And they were saying, you know, no hate at UMD, bring noisemakers to this Will Witt event. He's hurting marginalized communities. I'm like, okay. And so then the campus wasn't going to have any. Why are you laughing, Amla?
Because you're like, I'm like, okay.
Well, I'm just like, that's what they're going to do. I'm like, whatever. They're going to show up. They're going to be these protesters there. And so then at the event, they weren't actually going to give security for the event. They were going to make the students pay $1,700 to have security at the event, which is just absolutely ridiculous to think that you can't have security come or police officers come to keep the students safe. You're going to charge them $1,700. These are college students. Where are they going to get $1,700 to do this? So, but eventually I made a big enough of a stink about it on social media and with my publicist and everything. And so we got security there for free, which was good. And so I think that's why some of the leftists weren't as violent as we thought they were going to be. But anyway, I show up maybe 30, 45 minutes early to the event, and there's all these protesters outside. All these protesters who are outside, they got these signs. They're saying like, screw Will Witt, you know, he's this racist person. And so I go up to them. I go up to them because I'm like, I'm not scared of a fight. You know, whatever, I'll go and talk to them. I don't care. And the security didn't even follow me out. That's how brave I am. I had nails for breakfast that morning. And so I go out and I go and talk to them and I say, guys, I understand that you guys have probably heard lies about me, and I'm sure that I've heard lies about you guys. So I'd love to just sit here and talk to you guys and have a conversation and see exactly what you believe. And why do you think that I'm this racist person that you're saying? And so I say that, you know, you guys know me, you watch a show. I'm a very nice guy. I'm a pleasant person to talk to. I would think. Amla might not agree so much, but I think most other people would agree. And so I go and ask these students that, and they freak out. They freak out. They're yelling at me. They're calling me racist. I mean, they're doing just disgusting sexual jokes to me, like saying just like horrible, immature things and terrible things to me. I don't want to say what they said because it was disgusting, the things that they were saying. It's not worth me repeating the jokes that they were making, but they were very gross. You know, not PG-13. And so I did that, and I'm like, all right, well, whatever. These guys are hopeless. I, what am I supposed to do? I try to go up and have a conversation with them, and they won't talk. So then I go and do my event. It's fantastic. Great speech from me.
I'm a nice guy. It was really great.
I love how he had to qualify. No one else was giving the great speech. It was me that gave the great speech.
Yeah. No, it was me. You know, I gave a great speech. Well, I'm very proud of this speech. I think it's the best speech I've ever done. I've done lots of different speeches, and I think that this is I don't think it's my best because of just delivery of it. I think it's my best because of what I'm saying. And I think it's very important stuff that I'm talking about to these people. And if you want to hear this speech, you got to come to one of my book tour events. Anyway, and so then afterwards, these two leftist people, they come up to me, and you can already tell what they're thinking before they even come and talk to me. And they talk to me in the most passive-aggressive way that you've ever heard. I'm like, they come up to me and they say, well, you were talking about illegal immigration in your speech, and online, I actually read that illegal immigration doesn't hurt wages, so why should I listen to you?
I'm just like, that's hilarious.
Yeah, I'm like, what? I'm like, why do you come up to me? Why do you come up to me asking me these questions when you're not even actually looking for an answer? If a person who disagrees with me comes up to me and asks me a genuine question and says, hey, what do you, I read this about illegal immigration that talks about wages. What do you think about that? I'd be like, okay, let's have a conversation. But these people come up to me not even wanting to have a conversation. They just want to be rude and condescending and passive aggressive. And that's what's that. I mean, that's why I wrote my book, because I want people to have better conversations with people. That's what the point of the book is about. But some of these people on the left, they're just like, they seems like some of them are unsavable. Some of them are too brainwashed, too far gone to actually change their minds, because it's like that Yuri Bezmenov thing that we watched, where it's like you can take them to the camps, you can show them the information, and they still won't believe you. They still won't know, and they will still be rude and condescending towards you entirely. And then I was waiting outside for my Uber after the speech, and there were all these people. The protesters stayed, and they're waiting for me outside. I had to have security walk me to my Uber because I didn't know what they were going to do. It's ridiculous. It's absolutely ridiculous that I have to do that.
That's crazy that it's just you have to be concerned about that simply for having a difference of opinion. And I want to show one of your what I call fan art, what somebody made for you. Here it is. Will Witt is a racist liar. Written in pen on
I love it.
Lined paper, college roll paper.
Look at, just stay on the photo. Look at those legs. Those are, that was a man who held it. But I mean, look at, those are some small legs. Okay. Hot Scott would never have legs like that.
If only Scott could respond to that.
If only Scott could, I'd love to hear the response.
I think it's really funny how these people bring a sign that calls you a liar and yet are spreading lies about you. And they're coming to stop the hate, stop the spread of hate. And they're spreading their own hatred of you. I think that's pretty ironic that they're doing the very things that they claim to be fighting against. But it seems to be typical of this type of activist.
Hashtag stop the spread. Hashtag stop the spread. They love that. Yeah, no, it is. It's very ironic. And it's more ironic because I gave these people every single opportunity to talk to me. I gave them an opportunity before the event. I told them they could come into the event and ask questions. And I told them afterwards that if they're hanging around, like some of those protesters after the event, I would talk to them then too. And what did they do? They refused. They refused to have good conversations with me. I tried to have a conversation with one kid and he said, why do you work for an organization that's racist and transphobic? It's like, I would gladly have a conversation with you, but you use this bad faith argument and don't even let me speak. And it's like, why do I want to talk to you? I have no need to talk to you if that's how you're going to act, like a child.
Yeah, they don't want dialogue because they know if they had dialogue, it would challenge their views in a way that they could not defend. So they just want to throw hate at you and make signs and picket your event and come and make noise so that you can't speak. And it's all just in an effort to characterize you as something that you're not. And they don't care if they're false. They don't care if they're the ones who are actually lying. And when you go and confront them about it, all they do is get defensive or they don't even invite the conversation. So it's almost pointless.
You would hope that these people would go out of their way to find out what the real answer is on whatever it is that they think, that if they have all this hate inside of them, that they would go and try and say, like, how can I get rid of this hate? You know, that seems to be a very strange, I'm just realizing this now, it seems to be a very strange symptom of many of these people, that they have this hatred, they have this contempt, and then what do? They go and they hate, and they, instead of trying to find love and happiness within their lives and passion, they hate, and they use that as their fuel source. I mean, it's like Star Wars. It's like joining the dark side. It literally is, where they are using their hate and anger to fuel what they're doing. And it's like, that's a sad way to live life because you're unhappy that way. You're very unhappy. Like, wouldn't you want to get into a place where different ideas aren't going to destroy your own existence? Like, you should be able to have difference of opinion come into your life and be able to handle it, be a mature enough person to handle differences of opinion. But that's just not how it is.
Yeah, it's sad. And they would do anything to strip you of your freedom just for simply where you fall ideologically. And it is really, really sad. And we had Zuby on the podcast yesterday to talk about freedom and the pandemic and all of this stuff that's going on and sort of his view of human psychology. And another person who's come out with a video sort of talking about that subject matter is Joe Rogan. So let's react to this.
It didn't exist previously. If they can figure out a way to force you into carrying something that lets you enter businesses or lets you do this or lets businesses open, historically, they are not going to give that power up. They find new reasons to use it.
I'll be back.
We have to protect those freedoms at all costs, whether you agree with people's choices or not, because it is the foundation that this country was founded on. Freedom. This idea of freedom, there's so many people that think it's frivolous, it's not important, it's not the main thing that we should be focused on, but it is the literal structure that allows this country to be so amazing. Every single country that's ever existed other than the United States, up until 1776, every country that has ever existed was run by dictators, all of them. This is the first experiment in self-government that actually worked, and it created the greatest superpower the world's ever known. It created the greatest cultural machine, the greatest machine of art and creativity and innovation right here. And how did it do that? It did it through freedom. And as soon as you see something, anything that comes along and inhibits your freedom, you should be very cautious of that thing. Should be very suspicious, because anything that comes along that can inhibit your freedom is by definition anti-American.
It's pretty good. That's pretty powerful.
yeah, that was a pretty cool video. The editing was cool.
He makes an important point that people don't really care about freedom anymore. We saw it with the Chris Cuomos and the Don Lemons talking about, oh, you guys just want freedom. Who cares about that? We saw it with Arnold Schwarzenegger saying, you know, F your freedom. Who cares about it? You see it with all these young people who don't understand our founding, don't understand why freedom, life, liberty, the pursuit of happiness is even important anymore. And we're so disconnected from freedom, the definition of freedom, why it's important, why it is sacred to our founding. And at this point, we're just throwing it away. We're willingly giving it away to our government.
School your freedom, Arnold Schwarzenegger. It is sad, but that's what the elites in this country have done. The elites in this country know that if they destroy people's knowledge on freedom, they destroy people's knowledge of history and all of that, then they can control them and easily take them away because they make it so that people don't value it. So if people don't value freedom, if they don't value the things that gave them the right to be innovative, to be passionate, to be an individual, if they don't value those types of things anymore, well, then of course people are going to turn away from it if every single institution is telling them that they don't need it.
Right. And now they're teaching people that it's the right thing to do to give away your freedom. By giving away your freedom, you're taking care of other people. You're taking care of your community. You're saving grandmas by giving me your freedom and by letting me mandate what you do with your life. And the disconnect is so strong and it happens so quickly. I was amazed by how fast people were just, sure, fine. Here's my liberty. Just take it. I understand. It's for the greater good. Everything's for the best. You can go ahead and do that. And it happened so swiftly.
And this is why what's happening in schools right now is so pernicious, because when you rewrite history or erase certain things from history, a generation is raised without understanding what it cost to acquire freedom, mm-hmm. and how rare it is in history, as Joe Rogan was talking about, then you have no appreciation for it. And like Dennis Prager says, like, liberty is a value, not an instinct. And the American it was founded on the idea of liberty. It was founded on an aspirational idea of freedom, meaning away from tyranny, away from which was the norm of monarchy, mm-hmm. and people telling you what to do and how to live your life in the name of, well, their own God-given power. But now it's in the name of public, the greater good, or public safety. And it's got a different face on it. The tyranny now, modern tyranny, has a different face. And I think for whatever reason, people aren't able to see that because of it, because they disguise it in the name of good. But it's really no different than someone like a monarch claiming the divine right of kings back in history and just saying, hey, everyone has to do what I say because this is the right thing to do in the name of God. Now they're saying this is the right thing to do in the name of the collective, or mm-hmm. this is the right thing to do in the name of the greater good. And so defer your individuality, defer your own. If I spit on you and tell you it's raining, just thank me for the weather update.
Right.
You know? And that's basically, it's gaslighting on a massive scale. And like Will's talking about, the dangerous thing is there really is an elite class, or that concentrates the mainstream narrative and tells you, they define what you're allowed to think, mm-hmm. And they all march to the beat of the same drum. And we saw YouTube today just came out with a new announcement that they're censoring any dissenting information that what they characterize as misinformation about the vaccine or whatever,
right.
About any approved vaccine. And it's getting worse and worse. And when you have the big tech is now become, we have this new documentary about it that came out today, but they've become the gatekeepers of even what you're, the information that you're allowed to see. And we're literally watching our freedom just being stripped away, and they've somehow gaslit enough people to be okay with it. And that's really scary. Yep.
There was this chick at the event yesterday in the protesters, and she looked like, I mean, if you're thinking of a liberal, she looked like a liberal. Okay. So just imagine that and you'll know what she looked like. And she had this whole case of N95, the masks. And I'm outside. I don't have a mask on. Of course I don't have a mask on. I'm outside. And she's coming up to me and she's yelling at me and she's offering me a mask. She's like, here, put this on. Take this mask. Put it on. Put it on. I'm like, no, like, it's fine. I don't need your mask. Thank you though. And she's like, you have to put it on. You have to put on. You're endangering the rest of us. Put it on. Like yelling at me to put on this mask outside. I'm like, no, I'm not going to put on this mask just because you give it to me. But they expect that, like, exactly what you were saying before. It's like they think that because they are these people have told them that this is the right thing to do, that if anyone disagrees with them, then they're an evil, horrible person. And so like the fact that I wouldn't take this person's mask, and the fact that it's something like I won't be susceptible to their delusions. You know, someone tells them something and says, hey, you have to do this, and then they all believe it like sheep. And so then when I come up and I say I'm not going to be that same type of sheep, then they get mad at me. They get upset. They get upset because I am not aligning with their principles, the things that they all believe in, the things that they all come together in and agree with. And then you have someone coming in and disrupting that. That's very frustrating for them. You know, it's like I'm destroying a part of themselves because they don't know how to handle someone who has a difference of opinion that way. So then they want to come and destroy me, essentially. You know, they want to destroy anyone who has that dissenting view. So this like whole freedom, the idea of freedom, they don't like it. They don't like it if it means that they are not going to be able to be safe within their herd of people.
Yeah. And I think a lot of people, we discussed this yesterday, have sort of authoritarian tendencies, and those tendencies can be triggered by certain instances, whether that is anger, whether that's fear, whether that's oppression, whatever you want to call it. And I think the pandemic has coupled those authoritarian tendencies with fear. So if you can strike fear in somebody that they believe that you're going to cause harm to their family or to their friends or to them, they themselves, they will try to force regulations upon you, and they'll look up to the government and to all of these different entities and institutions who disseminate information down to us and tell us what we should do. And then they work as the law enforcement in a sense, and they make sure that it's regulated on the ground because they're scared. And it's a sad thing, and it would be a lot easier to sort of break that fear up if people were willing to have discussions.
Yeah, that's why free speech is so important. But like what Will's saying, I mean, these people who they're threatened by you not becoming a sheep like them, because they need to feel validated in the fact that they've already given up their free thought. They've already outsourced their ability to look at data risks for themselves or think for themselves. They've outsourced that to big tech, or they've outsourced that to the mainstream media or whomever. And they just follow along like sheep to whatever the mainstream narrative is. But because they've made that sacrifice, when they see someone who hasn't, they feel threatened because, oh, well, you know, I gave up my freedom of thinking, and I need to feel validated in that, but you're not doing that. So no, I, in order to feel right, in order to feel affirmed that I'm made the right choice, I have an existential psychological need to be validated in that, and for you to comply with the same things that I complied with. Otherwise, you're on the out group, and does not compute in my new worldview that I've adopted.
Because the alternative is just, it's really, really tough. The alternative of you know, going to Will and saying, you know what, you're right. And I apologize. You've given me the facts and information, and now I realize that I was probably on the wrong side of this thing. The alternative to that is, I'm losing my train of thought. Well,
it's not even saying that you're right. It's like just coming up. It's not even saying you're right. It's like just coming up to me and saying, okay, you have a difference of opinion. That's pretty cool. That's fine. You know, and allowing someone to have that. It's not a authoritarianism where some girl comes up to me trying to force me to wear a mask outside. You know, it's like she should just understand that I have a difference of opinion about it and be okay with that.
Yeah. And a society built on the idea of freedom is comprised of individuals who make their own choices and make their own assessments and think for themselves. So if you're doing that for yourself, then you naturally have a respect for someone else who, and their ability to make their own choices. And that creates space for you to have dialogue, because it's like, of course, I think for myself, so I'm going to make my own choice, but I'm not just drinking in a pre-packaged worldview that I'm just going to subscribe to willy-nilly. And so if you have constructed a worldview of your own based on your own looking at facts and your own experiences and thinking for yourself, then you're going to be willing to have dialogue with other people because, hey, maybe there's something I missed in mine. You know, you have a natural distrust for yourself, and you have a natural just like you have a natural skepticism for someone else who's trying to impose a worldview on you.
Yeah.
But once you have just violated your integrity as a human being and said, you know what, no, I'm just going to not think for myself anymore and allow the prepackaged worldview to dictate how I'm going to think and what I'm going to do, then you are threatened by people who do think for themselves, and you're like, you need to comply like we are. What's wrong with you? And then you're treating them like a cancer on the system or something that needs to be eradicated. Oh, this is a non-compliant. That's what we're seeing with like people who are not complying with all these mandates now are the problem. Even though, you know, if you're uninfected and you're unvaccinated, so now we have to get rid of you in society and fire you and squeeze you out because, you know, you're not complying with the mainstream narrative. It's not about whether or not you're actually a threat to people by being affected in any way. It's you're a threat to people because you're not complying.
Yep. Well,
you
you're going to get
willy-nilly.
What'd you say?
Willy-nilly is a great phrase.
We need to bring back willy-nilly.
More people should use willy-nilly. It's a fantastic phrase.
Willy
I'm
nilly.
A big fan of it.
Is it because your name
maybe
is
I
in it?
Maybe I like it because, yeah, I think that's probably why I like it. But it's also like it's just a great phrase. Or telling people like to kick rocks. I wish more people use that too. I think that's
yeah,
another.
Yeah, that is a good one. We'll bring it back. Say it in one of your speeches.
Yeah, go kick rocks, Amala. I appreciate being on the show.
It goes right along with like, you know, it's not the heat that gets you.
Yeah.
It's the humidity.
Yeah. Tell the kid to go kick rocks.
Yeah. I made some good dad jokes in my speech yesterday. I can't remember what they were, but I know I made some very good ones.
Yeah, I can't remember what they were, but just trust me, they were great.
Well, listen, that's the most dad thing about it, is that I'm this older dad who can't even remember the things he said yesterday. And like a dad who will go and say the same jokes like every other day and continually say them. And they just get worse and worse. That's like what I'm doing.
Yeah, it's like when the waitress is like, "Do you want dessert?" And you're like, "Honey, you're gonna have to wheel me out of here."
I've always got a second stomach for dessert.
Did you leave the light on in the bathroom? I'm not made out of money.
Who touched the thermostat? Would you like to pay the heat bill, huh?
Oh, it feels like
when you pay the rent, you can make the rules.
there's so many just dad colloquialisms that we need to bring back. But anyways, Will, you're in Virginia now. Where are you off to next?
So West Virginia today. Tomorrow I'm off to Orlando for an event at UCF, which should be another great event. And then Friday I'm in Tampa for another great event. If you guys want any of the information on any of these events, you can go to my Instagram. You can click the link in my bio. It has my full tour. Next week, I'm going to be in the south and middle of the country. And then the last week, I'm going to be in the west side of the country. So check the link in my bio and get free tickets to all those events.
Awesome. So go see Will live, support him. Maybe he'll do the show for you when you go and meet him out there.
What do you mean, do the show?
You'll do the show. You'll do a full hour presentation for these people who come and meet you.
A full dad joke comedy set.
Oh, yeah. No. I will definitely do the full dad joke comedy set for anyone who comes to the event. It's very entertaining.
Well, thank you, Will, for being on. I don't know that we'll ever do this again in the future. I know you really begged me to be on the show, and I allowed it this once, but we'll see how you're received, and then we'll decide.
No, thank you. Thank you, Taylor and Amala, for coming on Will Wit Live. It's been incredible to have you guys on today.
Yeah.
Really excited about it. You know, it's a new direction for the show, I understand, but I think it worked. So thank you.
I liked the black version of you better yesterday.
Yeah, me too.
Listen, I don't care about your skin color. I care about your ideas, okay, Taylor?
Oh, okay. Virtue points for that one, Will. Good job.
Yeah, there you go. Look, Martin Luther King, he had a dream.
Guys, we'll keep you posted on Will and his tour. Hopefully have him on the show more often, although we'll see who asks for that. But
yeah, if they ask for me back, then I'll go on. Thanks for having me, guys. I appreciate it. It was fun.
You're welcome. You're very welcome.
See ya. Enjoy the free air of the South.
Okay, I will. It's not really south, but sure.
Florida's the south.
It's
what a great guest.
Yeah, what a great guest Will is. Again, I'll restate, I don't know that we're ever going to have him back on the show. I'm not sure that he really adds anything to the flavor of things.
Yeah, definitely not someone we'd like bring back. But
yeah. Too many corny jokes, and I just can't do it. There's no way. But yeah, we hope Will is doing well. Hopefully he doesn't run into any other crazy protesters while he's out and about on his book tour, because he had quite the time at UMD, as he said. And I think he's going to run into it more. Nobody likes it when Will shows up on their campus.
Nobody likes it.
Nobody likes it.
Not even the people who get tickets to go see his speech.
There's definitely some PragerU fans that will show up and hold it down for him, but it's not, you know? You know, the leftists really hate him.
That's a good sign. If people come out, I mean, it's a sad reflection of where, of the state of the world, whenever you have people who are protesting ideas coming to their campus. The university should be a place of the free exchange of ideas, and you should encourage exposure to different ideas and perspectives. So it's a sad reflection of the world, but it's a compliment to Will that he is speaking truth and making waves with it. So good on him, at least.
Right. Now, speaking of truth and making waves, a lot of people don't like to tell the truth. And that's a story that we're going to get into. I will simply read the headline to you. The headline is Black Man Arrested for N-Word Graffiti Swastikas at Emory University.
You can't laugh at that.
It makes me giggle. It makes me giggle because it's completely ridiculous. So if you all have been up to date with the news when it comes to hate crime hoaxes, we're familiar with the Jussie Smollett's. We're familiar with the Bubba Wallace. Jussie Smollett acted like somebody, these men came up to him and said, "This is MAGA country," and put a noose around him and subsequently beat him up. Of course, this was false, and he hired people to do this for him, and it was a huge publicity stunt. And then we had Bubba Wallace, you know, the famous race car driver who spoke to people and said, you know, there's a noose that's been hung in my garage where I keep my car.
When it was in reality just like a rope that you pull to close the garage.
It was just a rope that every single race car driver has in their garage. And the FBI had to launch a full investigation into this entire incident. And again, another hate crime hoax. So now we have our man here.
FBI is always doing just the Lord's work, you know, just always on the most important things and doing such a great job.
Constantly, except when it comes to United States gymnasts, which we learned about. So good job, oof, FBI. You're constantly working hard and really listening to people who come to you with actual crimes. Good job. Now we have Roy Lee Gordon Jr. at Emory University. So what happened essentially is that, you know, these two black women came into their office one day and the N-word was painted on their office, as well as Jewish employees who saw swastikas in their offices. Who did this? Someone might wonder. And I think...
No, but they don't. I guess they do. But it was like the fact that someone wrote something racist at this university in the bathroom or whatever was enough for the outrage to spin. And then when the truth came out... and the university was made aware, they left it out of their announcement, right?
Yes. So it gets announced that this happened, this incident happens, the campus goes crazy. Oh my gosh, there's this white supremacist Nazi running around Emory University. What do we do? What do we do? What do we do? And this goes on for a few weeks. Emory University found out in August that Gordon Lee Roy Jr., whatever, did this crime. And they decide, let's just not announce the fact that this... Now, this man did this.
For those listening, Amala, what is the race of Mr. Roy Lee Gordon?
Roy Lee Gordon Jr. is black, ladies and gentlemen, and also a former employee of Emory University. So Emory got this information. They knew exactly who he was, what he looked like, and the fact that, you know, maybe this wasn't an actual hate crime committed against people. Maybe this was a hoax by a black man. And they decided not to announce that to their students.
Now, how telling is it, though, that the outrage machine and the pre-written narrative script of our culture is so obvious to everyone that someone who has bad intentions like this, who really just wants to stir up drama and create dissension, knows exactly what to do. Oh, if I'm, even as a black man, if I manufacture a racism crisis at our school by writing some racist slurs on the doors and creating some noise, I can manufacture a whole thing of outrage and work everyone into a frenzy over this.
One of the sad...
Ooh.
Technical difficulties.
Tom Soul. Isn't that wild how they know the response they can get just by, you know, inventing these race hoaxes?
Yes.
And so it opens the door to people who have bad intentions to do this. And also, like, what else is the incentive? I've heard this before, like, the supply for racism exceeds the demand in America right now.
Yeah.
And because you get virtue points by being a victim. And I think that was more the case of Jesse Smollett. But it's like, what was this guy's incentive to even do this?
The demand exceeds the supply.
Did I say? I got it backwards.
The demand exceeds the supply for racism. No, it's true. What do you gain from doing this? Questionable. I honestly don't know, but clearly the university has something to gain by pushing this race narrative, because it's what our schools are starting to run on now, is that teaching kids that by virtue of being born whatever color, whatever gender they are, that they're oppressed. Now, if an incident occurs where black employees are coming to work and the N-word's painted on their door and Jewish employees are coming and there's swastikas on their door, well, great, because that supports your narrative. That supports the agenda. I can now affirm to everybody that what I've been shouting about in regard to critical race theory and gender theory is actually true. Look, somebody did this. And then, you know, a month passes by and you found out that somebody is a former employee who happens to be black at your university. And suddenly the agenda doesn't uphold anymore. And who would want to admit that? Who would want to come out and say, oh my gosh, I'm sorry we made this big stink about it, but it's actually a black employee. I think I would rather keep that under wraps if I made such a big deal out of it.
It's just sad when you have to work so hard to make reality fit your narrative instead of just living in reality. And the reality that we do occupy is racism it exists. There are probably some racist bigots in every state in the union somewhere, yep. But it's not a major crippling problem in America today, which kind of leads us to our next segment with one Tom Sowell.
That it does.
That the audience has been patiently waiting for.
I know. You guys see Tom Sowell in the title and you freak out, as do I. You know, we got Tommy Boy always looking over me in the back when I do this show. So he's always in my frame of reference. He's always in my mind. This is a video titled Thomas Sowell on Black History Myths Promoted by the Left. Without further ado, let's get right into it.
Things is that we talk in this country as if slavery was something unique to the United States or to blacks and whites.
You say 1619 is as important as 1776.
Yes. Our decision to buy that first group of 20 to 30 Africans would influence almost everything that would follow after. I think it is foundational. It is as foundational to who we became as a country as our decision in 1776 to break off from the British.
Recently, some school districts have decided that they'll be teaching a unit on early American history based on the New York Times 1619 project, which illustrates how the founding of this country is inextricably tied to the institution of slavery.
One of the sad things is that we talk in this country as if slavery was something unique to the United States or to blacks and whites. And in point of fact, slavery was one of the oldest institutions among human beings. They go back as far as there is recorded history.
Archaeological finds suggest that slavery existed before human beings could read and write. So what race, a racial difference between the slaves and the enslavers, that is a relatively new phenomenon. You didn't have in ancient times the ability to go to another continent and move millions of people of a different race across the ocean. So you enslaved the people who were nearby. The Europeans enslaved Slavs for centuries before they brought the first black African to the Western Hemisphere.
Okay, but so you're not suggesting, you do not wish to say anything other than that slavery as practiced in the United States was, it may have been recent, but you'd argue, you'd be willing to grant that it was particularly perverse and destructive because race got mixed into it at that point, right?
Race got mixed into it in the United States more than anywhere else for a very simple reason. The United States was founded, as the Declaration said, of Independence, said, all men are created equal.
Right.
If that's true, then the only way you can justify slavery is to say that some men are less than men.
I see. So the racial
But in Brazil, where Brazil imported more slaves than the United States, there was no such ideology. Brazil was not a democratic country. The whole issue never arose.
I see.
Ooh, we got to pause after each of these myths go through. What an intellect Tom Sowell is. And oh my gosh, if only he could run for president. at the ripe age of 90 something now.
I'd still vote for him.
I know there's a lot of people that would, because just his wealth of knowledge and his supreme understanding of the world and human psychology. But he makes a fantastic point here. So often on the left, I know this because I did it, the instinct is to lean on the institution of slavery to prove that, you know, our country is racist and is founded in racism, and those institutions that we continuously build and have had since our founding are also founded in racism because slavery was happening at the time. And that's certainly not true. And what I think about a lot in regard to the slavery issue is how white people have been indoctrinated into believing that they should feel bad about the transgressions of their ancestors. That has never went well. And it's not something that any civilized nation should fall into. It's not a sort of a reasoning that any civilization should fall into. And when I think about this as a black person, I think about the fact that black people enslaved other black people in Africa. You know, you see in these movies where the white colonials just showed up in Africa and they started snatching people off the ground and putting them in the ship and then just sailing them over to wherever the destination may be. Obviously, that's not the case. The institution of slavery existed in America because it existed in Africa prior. And they showed up, and guess what? There were already other African tribes enslaving other African tribes. So they already had slaves when we arrived in America, I mean in Africa, and we just said, hey, would you like to sell them to us as well? And they said, money and trade and all of this? Absolutely. You can have some of our slaves. So do black people feel black guilt for the fact that their ancestors enslaved other black people? No. No. And should I be expected to feel that way? No, probably not. So why do we expect white people to feel that way?
That's a good question.
It's one that I can't answer.
When you tease out their logic, it doesn't hold up. In the same way that by trying to, you know, the whole premise of 1619 is to make slavery the focal point of American history, and American history is characterized by slavery, and they leave out all the context that you just added, that hey, Brazil imported more slaves, that Tom Sowell pointed out, Brazil imported more slaves than the United States did. Yep. It was part of every civilization in history, but including Africans. Within Africa, Africans were enslaving other Africans and capturing Africans and selling them to Western slave traders and other slave traders around the world. They leave out right. all of the relevant facts, and then all that matters is it happened in America. And why would you do that? It's because you specifically have an aim to, because if you follow the logic of and the preaching of the 1619 Project proponents and the proponents of critical race theory, their goal is a revolution. Their goal is to usher in a new Marxist utopia. And so they're, in order to persuade you to be a part of that revolution, the first they have to taint America in your eyes, and they have to make the America through and through an evil institution from the get-go. And Tom Sowell's point is, no, America was founded on the premise that all men are created equal. Mm-hmm. Now, did they live up to that from the get-go? No. Yeah. And that is a stain on our history and something that we've had to reckon with. But thank God for voices like, for abolitionists, for Abraham mm-hmm. Lincoln, for Martin Luther King, who helped us live up to the founding ideals that were enshrined in the Constitution and the Declaration of Independence. And thank God, that is the story of America. The story of America is living up to the ideals that are the founders espoused and overcoming our own failures to do so. And so that's an honest representation of history. And America is uniquely great because we overcame our own deficiencies and our own moral failures. And we're still a work in progress. It's not, mm-hmm. no one's claiming that America is a perfect place or always has been. But the story of America is this continual improvement and incremental progress toward and striving toward the ideal of equality that would articulate in the Declaration of Independence. What they're saying is the founding ideals are not about freedom and equality. Yep. The founding ideals are slavery, and we wanted to enshrine that and enshrine whiteness.
And it's just a
false
narrative.
Yeah, it's just a false narrative, and it's a different myth and religion that they're trying to infect the minds of our generations with, of the new generations with, to hate America and usher in the revolution. And unfortunately, they've had a measure of success.
Yeah, many founding fathers knew that slavery was an institution that needed to end, and that's why the Declaration of Independence is written in the way that it is written. And let's not forget, first of all, slavery is not just a transgression that we can consign to America. Also, it's not a transgression that we can consign to the past because it is still happening right now. And guess what? Of all places, slavery is still happening in Africa right now. It is happening all over the world right now, particularly with sex slavery. But look at places like Libya, where there are actual people who are just getting kidnapped and enslaved. And this is happening in exactly the place that we're supposed to say is this paragon of society, Africa. It is happening there to this day right now. Yet I don't hear a peep about it, but I get to hear every single day about 1860s America. It blows my mind. Blows my mind. Let's keep watching.
One of the most pervasive stereotypes about Black Americans is that of the absent Black father. Where does this toxic idea about Black fathers even come from? Well, one theory takes it back to a 1965 report titled The Negro Family, The Case for National Action. The report became one of the most contentious political documents in 20th century America. Democrat and Assistant Secretary of Labor Daniel Patrick Moynihan put the report together to make the argument for how the Lyndon B. Johnson administration had to do more for racial equality than simply pass the Voting Rights Act. Moynihan argued that to really fight racial inequality, the government had to understand the state of Black communities and why they were the way they were. But Moynihan ended up focusing on one thing, the Black family. According to him, the fundamental reason for growing economic inequality between white and Black Americans was a crumbling family structure in Black communities. And at the foundation of the so-called crumbling Black family structure was the absent Black father. Moynihan looked at non-marital birth rates and rates of fathers living separately from their children and made a whole bunch of assumptions about parents' relationship statuses and parental involvement. The report didn't take into account factors like the legacy of slavery, generational wealth, or even economic migration in which men left their homes so that they could provide for their families.
A fallacy is that the current fatherless family so prevalent among contemporary Blacks are a legacy of slavery, where families were not recognized under slavery. This ignores the fact that the problem has become much worse among generations of Blacks far removed from slavery than among generations closer to the era of slavery. Yes. Close quote. Explain that.
You mean explain why it is so? Or
yeah, see, why is that? Why? What on earth is going on there? That is so counter to what we assume.
Well, first of all, the people, most people have not recognized the fact that that if you go back into the 20s, you find that married couple families were much more prevalent among Blacks then than today. Most Black kids grew up in homes with two parents under slavery itself and for generations thereafter. And as late as the 1960s, most Black children grew up in two-parent homes. When you think about it, I mean, centuries of slavery and generations of Jim Crow did not destroy the Black family. But one generation of the welfare state did.
Moynihan was excoriated for pointing this out.
1965, the Moynihan report. That's right,
yes.
The Moynihan report.
People took this as a way of putting down Blacks. What they don't understand was that, one, Moynihan was a scholar who knew that his own group, the Irish Americans, had that very same problem at the beginning of the 20th century. And more importantly, Moynihan's own father deserted the family when he was 10 years old.
Oh, I didn't know that.
He and his brother were out shining shoes in Times Square and Central Park to try to bring in a few pennies to help to keep the house going. And so where they'd been living in this wonderful suburban area, suddenly they were in a very rough neighborhood and they were shining shoes in Times Square to try to make ends meet. And so he understood that this was one heck of a problem that people should be warned about. And he was simply excoriated.
Pause. Ugh, Tom never ceases to amaze me. He's great, and he talks about something that is important, and it's a prevalent and pervasive issue to this day, and that is the lack of fatherhood, not only in the Black community, but in all communities. And that is one major prerequisite for success, not only in this nation, but really everywhere, and that is having two parents. And once you've lost your father figure, specifically for young men, that is a really, really problematic thing to have to go through. And I don't think people fully understand how pervasive the issue is. Having a lack of a father in your household growing up from the day that you're born to the day that you leave your house to the rest of your life, really, because that's a father sticks with you forever. You're increased likelihood of obesity, of homelessness, of going to jail, of dropping out of high school, of never attending college, of domestic violence, being not only a victim, but a perpetrator, of homicide, of rape, of depression, of anxiety, of attempted suicide, of being clinically taken care of in an institutional hospital. Everything that could really possibly go wrong in your life has a higher likelihood when you lack a father.
It's true.
Yeah.
And I think another tragic thing that we're seeing in our generation is fatherlessness has become extremely more common. We're seeing that teachers and police officers are having to do the job of fathers, and they're being asked to step in and mm-hmm. be the disciplinarians and be the, they do all the jobs that fathers are not doing. And, but obviously that it's not going to have as good of outcomes when you need to have a father in your life, because that person is there present and invested in your success. And a teacher's are, but there's only so much they can do. And it's unfair to put that burden on like a public educator who's got 30 other kids to worry about.
Yep.
And then it's unfair to put that expectation on police. Or really, it's weird now because we're saying we don't even want the police to be a barrier anymore for, or like, it's all about accountability, right? Like mm-hmm. who is holding an individual accountable for their actions? And right. we keep drawing the line further and further back to where we saw a video, viral video today of in Chicago, people were at an Ulta makeup store and two guys were just loading bags full of the goods and carrying them right out the door. And we've drawn the line further and further back of where you have to face accountability for your actions. Mm-hmm. And fathers are the first line of defense in the household, where you learn as a child, like, okay, this type of behavior is unacceptable. You learn a basic respect for authority. You learn basic respect for institutions and for the rules of what it is to participate in society.
Right.
And when you miss that, there's no one else to teach you that until you run into the law. But now here we are where the law is not even doing it, and we're just entering into a state of anarchy. It's wild.
Yeah. And there's some people in the comments right now saying that welfare is not contributing to the lack of fathers. Absolutely it does. And a good book to read, again, by my friend Tom Sowell over here, is Discrimination and Disparities. And he talks about how the welfare state was a major, major catalyst for this problem. And let's give some context to this. From 1940 to 1960, the black poverty rate decreased by 40%. And in two decades, 40% the black poverty rate decreased. Now, let's think about what was happening in 1940 and 1960. 1940 and 1960 was the supreme era of Jim Crow, of actual legislated discrimination and racism towards black people and people of color. Yet the poverty rate decreased 40 percentage points. Can you explain that to me? I can explain it to you. It's because we functioned in a free market and black families were together. We emphasized the fact that we needed nuclear families, and there was more black nuclear families percentage wise than there is now. And then you have the 1960s getting ushered in. Lyndon B. Johnson becomes president. He institutes this large social welfare system and incentivizes single parent households, specifically single mother households. And suddenly the black fatherlessness rate goes up exponentially. And guess what? The poverty rate continues to decrease, but nowhere near at the same rate as it did in decades prior. And I will remind you, decades where there was legislated racism. So even when Jim Crow laws and the civil rights movement came around and took away those laws, the black poverty rate decreases, but at a much slower rate, because we don't have fathers in the household. We don't have nuclear families. And that is so important to not only black success, but anybody's success in America. So welfare 100% was a catalyst in creating this problem.
Absolutely. And yeah, are we going to continue with the video?
Yeah, no, okay. You have to say what you want to say.
No, go for it.
Okay, let's go.
Black Americans, a group often identified as beneficiaries of the welfare state in America, made considerable economic progress in the 20th century. Fine, of course, but much, if not most, this is the thing with you. The dependent clause is where the sting is. But much, if not most, of this progress was prior to the massive expansion of the American welfare state. Close quote. That is so counterintuitive, because we hear so much about African-American progress since civil rights and the establishment of the welfare state that it really has become a kind of American intuition. Explain yourself, Dr. Sowell.
Well, as of 1940,
87% of black households were in poverty. Over the next 20 years, that declined to 47%. This is all prior to the civil rights laws.
Oh, he's basically... I'm just going to pause because he's basically going to explain what I just explained to you, which is perfect. And again, go watch this video. It's called Tom Sowell on Black History Myths Promoted by the Left. And he goes through four different myths that are promoted by the left when it comes to black history and debunks them right in front of your very eyes. Now, before we get into our game for today, which is, you know, I feel like I display my intellect when it comes to politics and social issues. This game is revolving around NFL football teams and me looking at, what is it, their mascot? Okay, their logos, and guessing what the team is.
Every American should know, at least be able to recognize NFL team logos.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to try, and I have a feeling it's going to not really go well whatsoever, but I will try to do it for you guys. And I don't know. This is going to show the true lacking in my knowledge when it comes to these subject matters. But, you know, I think something that I should address, and that is in the comments a lot on this video in particular when it comes to Tom Sowell, is the "she ain't black" comment. Because I do watch your guys' comments when we do these YouTube videos for the most part on the stream. Now, what's interesting is the non sequiturs that the left in particular put forth when it comes to arguments made specifically about black issues. One of the most common things that I get commented on my Instagram, on YouTube, on any social media platform that I'm on is either "she ain't black" or "she is a white supremacist" or "she has some sort of internalized racism." Again, it's a non sequitur. People who comment that are never actually addressing the argument that I've made. They're never actually addressing the assertion or the premise of the argument that I've made. They are completely going out in left field just to say she's not black, just to use that as an argument to somehow invalidate the things that I'm saying. Now, luckily, nobody gets to dictate what your race is. You simply are. I am half black. I am also half white. And thus, it doesn't really matter that you say that I'm not black. I just simply am. But it's just an interesting,
response. The whole foundational black American thing. Remind me again why they say you're not. Because you were born and raised in the United States.
Yes.
So you had the black, quote unquote, black experience, did
yes.
you not?
Yes, I did.
So is it your white
funny.
Mom that didn't invalidates that?
No.
Or is it the Nigerian dad?
It is the Nigerian dad. So for some context, I was called out by a very famous, I don't even know what you would call his political leanings, just because he's completely ludicrous. His name is Tariq Nasheed. He coined the term foundational black American. I was told that I'm unable to speak on black issues because I'm not a foundational black American. Now, a foundational black American means that your ancestry leads back to somebody who was a slave. And because my father is Nigerian and immigrated over to the United States from Nigeria, I am somehow not a foundational black American, which makes sense. Obviously, I'm not descendant of slaves, but that somehow invalidates my response when it comes to black political issues, which makes no sense whatsoever.
No, and like, okay, whose side do you want to be on? You have these modern intellectuals who play these word games and decide whose opinion is valid and invalid based on the color of their skin or their family history or whatever. Or then you have an intellectual like Tom Sowell who mm-hmm. looks at facts, investigates, like if you make a claim or you put out a narrative, what does he do? He looks, does history support your narrative? Do statistics mm-hmm. support your narrative? He investigates them, gets to the bottom of it. That's what an intellectual should do, is to try to find the truth. If you're invalidating people's speech because they don't have the right skin color or family history, you're not interested in finding the truth. You're interested in promoting an ideology.
Yep, because here's the fact of the matter. Anybody can talk about quote unquote black issues. Anybody. It doesn't matter what your skin color is, so long as you have access to information and facts, and that information and facts lead you to an opinion or an objective truth, you can speak about quote unquote black issues. So that's just my response to the "she ain't black" comment, because either way, it wouldn't matter if I was or if I wasn't black. It just so happens that I am 50% so. So thank you guys for that comment. next
now
one.
For our game.
Now for our game.
Very smooth transition. I forgot to do music again. One of these days.
It's okay. I'll have plenty to say about these logos because I will judge them. And then I'm going to try to come up with a name that is at least close to what the actual name is. As far as cities go or any sort of affiliation with a geographical point, I'm already counting myself out for that.
And for some context, this has been a viral TikTok trend where guys will do this with their girlfriends and like try to get them to name these NFL teams and they just fail at it. And for further context, Amala did not know who Brett Favre is. It took her about a good 5 minutes of us trying to give her clues and stuff to name LeBron James. We're like, name basketball players. She got like Kevin Durant and Michael Jordan and then like could not come up with LeBron.
I got Steph Curry.
I'm like, he's the most famous one alive right now. He was in the new Space Jam. And she's just like, I don't know. Who could it be? Anyways, sorry, Alma. I'm not mocking you.
I knew Steph Curry, Kevin Durant. I knew Michael Jordan. I knew, well, who else did I know?
I don't. Oh, you, Magic Johnson. You pulled Magic Johnson out of the 80s and brought him back.
Magic Johnson.
Like, wow. Yeah, you couldn't think of LeBron. I'm like, wow. Anyways, okay, let's go to this first one.
Next. Okay, let's see.
All right, so this is your first test, Amala.
Okay.
Do you know this NFL team? This one, I gave you an easy one.
It's
first.
A Viking.
Yes.
It's a Viking.
So do you,
I don't know where the Vikings are from.
Okay.
So.
Think. Okay, do you know anything about the history of U.S. immigration among Scandinavians?
No, it's not one of my top studies, that one.
Wow. Well, as a Norwegian immigrant to Minnesota, whose family have been farmers in Minnesota for generations,
okay.
I'm quite offended that my Viking ancestors did not clue you into the fact that they're from Minnesota.
I'm sorry.
So Minnesota Vikings. And this is also my favorite team for obvious reasons. So I grew up a huge Vikings fan. Unfortunately, we always miss field goals in critical moments, but it's fine. Anyways, all right, moving on.
Next one.
That was supposed to be an easy one. You got the team name.
Okay. This does not tell me anything.
That's the point.
Okay.
There's a T.
Titans. Are they Titans?
That's the Titans logo.
Are
How
you kidding
did you
me?
Get it?
Because it looks like steel and I saw fire, which tells me like, you know, Titan.
Oh,
you
wow.
Know?
I guess. I would have never thought that from the logo. But...
Yeah, no, that clued me in. I was like, well, you can't, with a T, what
okay,
else could you
state?
Be? Tigers or something? Titans are from Cleveland.
Okay. Scott's shaking his head over here as a semi-Cleveland name.
Titans.
Titans. No, it's Tennessee Titans. There's
of course.
The alliteration going.
The
Tennessee
T's.
Titans. They used to be the Tennessee Oilers, but now it's the Titans.
Well, at least I got Titans right. That's
yeah,
pretty,
no, I was impressed. That was
that's
impressed.
Very impressive.
All right.
Next one. Oh, how am I supposed to know this?
I mean, this is kind of a very strange name. A strangely named team.
Okay. All it is a red helmet. So this tells me.
I was going to ask, what color do you think that helmet is? I think
it's
more of
red?
Like an orange, huh?
I think it's red.
Okay. Well, what's your guess on this team's name?
I'm going to say they are.
This is Scott's team, by the way.
The Red Robins.
There's not even a bird in there.
I know. Oh. All I'm going off is the red.
This
the
is
red
a tough
helmet.
One because there's really nothing to go on.
And they are from Tampa.
The Tampa Red Robins. Okay. So the team, you were close on the color thing. The team name is the Browns.
Oh, well, that's obviously,
and
yeah.
The Browns are from Cleveland. So... You missed it by one. Not the Cleveland
but
Titans.
I said Cleveland.
Cleveland Browns. And this is Scott's team. He was from.
My name is Cleveland Brown. Oh, I should have known.
Is that what's that from?
Cleveland Brown. The Cleveland Brown Show.
Oh, I don't know what that
the
is.
The guy from Family Guy. The black guy from Family Guy.
Oh, is he like a fan after the fact?
The
did
laugh.
They make his name after the team? They must have, right? Okay. Well, anyways.
Well, yeah, his name is Cleveland Brown. Next one. Oh, my gosh.
The Red Robins. Oh, this is my favorite one.
Does the W pertain to the mascot, or does it pertain to the city, or does it pertain to neither?
Should I give you the hint? I guess, well, it's kind of both now, but the city. They'll just say the city.
The Winona Walruses.
Okay. Your hint is... This team had an offensive team name, quote unquote offensive team name, and was
Washington
canceled.
Redskins.
Yes.
Oh.
But what's the new name of the team?
The Washington. They're not the Indians because that's offensive too, right? The Washington Indigenous. the Washington Natives.
No, you're gonna love this. Okay, where they canceled the Redskins name a couple years ago. And they apparently, and this is indicative of where we're going as a country, because everything's so offensive that you can't come up with anything that works. The team name for the last couple of years has literally been Washington Football Team.
That's awesome.
It's just football team.
Wow.
So Washington Football Team is literally their name. Like, imagine wearing a jersey and like the jersey says football team.
You know what? What's your favorite
team? Football team.
I respect it. It's very on the nose, you know? There's no running from it. There's no hiding from it. It's completely devoid of offense.
At least you have the honesty to live out the fact that you're too much of a coward to come up with a name because you're afraid of offending people.
That is very, very true.
But this is where we're going, you know? You're not going to be able to, like, I was thinking earlier today, like, can white people, you can't be a fan, or you can't, like, be a fan of POC music because that's appropriation somehow. But then if you are a fan of, like, quote-unquote white people music, is that also like white centering, you know? So you can't be a fan of anything anymore. You can't have a team name, an actual team name. It's just, this is where we're headed.
You can't win for losing.
Anyways.
You really can't win for losing. Here's our next one.
All right. I had to block out. They usually have the name of the team in the logo here, and so I blocked that out.
But. You know, this logo looks so familiar, but I have absolutely no idea. It looks like a clothing brand of some sort. You know, it doesn't even give me any sort of play as to what the mascot is. Nothing to state or anything. I am...
Just make the guess, Amala.
The New York City Giants. Is that even football?
She's really just throwing darts at
the wall. Is that even football? Is that baseball? The
New York Giants is actually a team. Yeah, that was good. But this is not their logo.
Oh, so New York and Giants do go together.
Yes. So you got that much.
Guys, honestly, clap for me, because the fact that I got that is amazing.
Anyways, the logo that we're looking at is the Pittsburgh Steelers. So have you ever heard of them?
I know. I've heard of them because they have been in the Super Bowl several times, right?
Yeah, this is true. They've been in the Super Bowl. They've won, I think, the second most Super Bowls behind the Patriots.
I thought it was behind the Packers or something.
Oh, Packers are up there, too. That's a good guess.
Thank
Look
you.
At you. Can you name any Pittsburgh Steeler ever? Player?
I was trying to think of who the quarterback was at the time that he was on the Super Bowl, because everybody was talking about it, but I literally have no idea. So, is Peyton Manning in relationship
Ben Roethlisberger has been the quarterback there for a long time.
Who is Peyton Manning?
He was the Colts and then the Broncos. He was a Colts brother. Anyways, okay, let's keep going.
Okay, next one.
All right, I had to block out the middle thing here,
too. It's giving me some Native American vibes, some Indian vibes. Looks like an arrowhead.
Warmer.
Are they the arrowheads?
Their stadium is called Arrowhead Stadium.
Okay.
It could be offensive to modern ears. They're probably next to be canceled, if that's a good hint.
The Phoenix. They're next to be canceled. The Phoenix Running Bulls.
Running Bulls.
I was trying to think of a Native American phrase.
Sitting Bulls.
The Sitting Bulls.
Because they're not sitting,
bulls.
They're running because they're playing football. Oh, man.
Yeah.
No, the Kansas City Chiefs. Chiefs.
Oh, Chiefs.
There's a KC in the middle of the arrow.
Kansas City.
I could have left that in there, honestly. You needed all the help.
I still would have failed miserably. Okay, this
next.
Is the Seahawks. I know this for sure.
Oh, look at you.
And they are from Seattle.
Wow. All right. One. Are we keeping score here?
I got two.
You got the Vikings and the Seahawks.
But I didn't know where the Vikings were from, so I got one and a half.
Okay.
I know the Seattle Seahawks because I had a best friend in, you know, throughout my young years, whose dad was a huge fan of the Seattle Seahawks, and this was on his truck. So it's the only reason I know that.
Well done.
Next one looks like a panther. Is it a panther?
Yes, it is.
Okay.
So now you're at up to 2 points.
Panthers.
You got that extra half point.
I can't say that. I'm not going to say that. I'll expose where I'm from. Panthers.
I'll give you a hint. Okay.
Okay.
This is a team for two states combined into one.
A team for two states have the Panthers.
Technically, yeah.
That made it worse. Philadelphia.
It's two states and you put it on Philadelphia?
Yep.
That's a bold strategy. Let's see if it works out for her.
Right. It's not going to work.
Carolina. Carolina.
North Carolina, North and South.
So Carolina Panthers. They left off the North or South. Just
it's
to
two
make
states.
It.
I could have went for the Dakota.
Where's their stadiums? I think in Raleigh, I think. I can't remember. Yeah.
Charlotte,
yeah.
Okay.
Okay. Someone said the Black Panthers team. Okay, so you're up to 2 points. Okay, this one. What you got?
The Jacksonville Jesters.
I could see that. It kind of looks like a court.
It
in
does
the medieval...
look like a little jester. Yeah.
Okay. But no, that's wrong.
Okay.
You're in the same, or you're in the right region-ish.
I'm in the right region?
Does it help if I tell you that this is a fleur-de-lis?
It's a what? A fleur-de-lis?
Fleur-de-lis.
Does not help
it's
at all.
It's a symbol of the city of
New Orleans.
New Orleans. So you got that, kind of.
Okay.
And then it's the Saints.
The Saints. That makes
the
sense.
The song When the Saints Come Marching In, all that. Okay. So New Orleans Saints.
New Orleans Saints.
New Orleans. Next. Are we giving you a point for that?
So no. Okay. No, wow. I don't deserve it. Stallions?
Okay.
Looks like a stallion?
It does look like a stallion.
Does a team called the Stallions exist?
Not in NFL.
Oh.
This is the Broncos. This was Peyton Manning won the Super Bowl with them a few years ago. He finished his career
there.
And
I don't know where the Broncos are from. So.
Do you want to take a guess? Think like Mountain West-ish.
Provo, Utah.
I mean, somewhat close. Denver. The Denver Broncos. Yeah, remember, it's got to be a big enough city to sustain an NFL team.
What it takes to sustain an NFL team.
Only the largest cities in America have them. Okay. I mean, for the most part, besides Green Bay.
This looks like a Bronco, and this is not a Bronco? the Bulls. These are the running Bulls.
It looks like the Chicago Bulls logo a little bit. I've never thought of that before, but.
It does look like a bull to me.
Okay, the state flag is depicted in the logo, if that helps.
Oh, gosh, you know that doesn't help. I suck at state flags.
It's a very common state flag. Everyone wants to move there.
So it's Texas.
Yeah.
Dallas Cowboys. Is that wrong?
So fun.
Is that wrong?
No, it's the Houston Texans.
Gosh.
So, yeah, the Cowboys is like a star logo. But see how this is fun, because it's amazing.
It's amazing what I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, fun for me, at least. I don't know. It's probably torture for you.
And that's it. I've got 2 points.
So 2 out of 11. Well, it's really 2 out of 22 possible points, because we're doing separate points for city and team name. So you failed.
Miserably. You know what? It's okay, because I knew I was going to fail. When you know you're going to fail, everything is fine. I went into this knowing the boundaries of my knowledge when it comes to the NFL. So, you know, I'd like to thank my mom and dad for everything that they've done for me. This was not a victory, but we fought really hard throughout the entire season. When they threw me that touchdown free throw, I didn't know how it was going to go. But I kicked her to the goalpost. And I got 3 points for it.
It was a team win. Coach put together a great game plan, and we just went out there and executed. You know, that's all we can do.
Yep.
So I just want to thank my teammates and my Lord and Savior for making this into a successful
podcast
today.
All I could do was kick that football over to the goal and hope it made it past the goalie.
Okay, now you're just being silly.
No, I am. Now I'm just being stupid for the sake of being stupid. But thank you guys so much for watching. Please like, subscribe, click the notification bell to be notified every single day when we go live, 2:30 PST, 5:30 Eastern. If you'd like to listen to us rather than watching, you can go to Spotify, Google Play, or Apple Podcasts. Leave us a 5-star review so that we know that you like the show and that other people know that you love the show, not just like it, you love it. If you'd like to get a text of when we're going live, text live to 41776. And every single day when we go live, 2:30 PST, 5:30 Eastern, you will get a text message sent to your very own cellular device. Thank you guys so much for watching. We will be back tomorrow with a very special guest. They're always very special
guests. The quarterback of the Running Bulls.
His name is Dave Rubin. Woo! Dave Rubin is going to be on the show tomorrow for the entire hour, talking to you guys about a multitude of things. But I think we're going to focus on the transition from left to conservative. You don't want to miss it. Again, Dave Dave Rubin of the Rubin Report is going to be on our show live here in studio, sitting in Will's seat, much better looking, and we're gonna talk through some things. So make sure
and also
you are here.
Make sure you check out Dave Rubin is featured in our new mini short documentary called "Restricted: How Big Tech Is Taking Away Your Freedom." They're certainly taking away our freedom of speech by suppressing our content and controlling what you see online. But we do a deep dive into all that. It's a brand new mini documentary from PragerU, so go check that out. It's available now, PragerU.com/restricted. And Dave Rubin is featured in that documentary, so we'll be talking about that a little bit with him tomorrow as well.
We'll see you guys tomorrow. Be on the lookout. Bye, guys.